Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Alexis Madrigal. Coming up on the March 5th ballot in San Francisco, you'll find Prop F, a measure that would deny cash assistance benefits to people who use drugs and refuse treatment. Proponents say it's a common sense approach to drive people into treatment while keeping tax dollars from going to buy drugs. Opponents, though, including much of the San Francisco public health establishment, say it will do more harm than good by penalizing vulnerable residents. We've got Mayor London Breed, Supervisor Aaron Peskin, and Trent Rohr, the Executive Director of the San Francisco Human Services Agency, to help us debate the pros and cons of this measure. They're all coming up next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Here is the text of Prop F as it appears on the ballot in San Francisco. Shall the city require single adults age 65 and under with no dependent children who receive city public assistance benefits and whom the city reasonably suspects are dependent on illegal drugs to participate in screening, evaluation, and treatment for drug dependency for those adults to be eligible for most of those benefits? Translation. Should the city be screening, not testing, but screening people getting cash from the city and require them, if the city finds they're addicted to drugs, to get treatment in exchange for those dollars? We'll be getting into the details and the implications and the prospective implementation, but that's the core idea. And one of the measure's key backers has been San Francisco Mayor London Breed, who joins us this morning. Welcome back, Mayor Breed.
Thank you.
So why are you behind this bill? What's the problem you're trying to solve here?
Well, I'll start with who brought this to my attention and wanting me to be very aggressive about dealing with the overdose deaths in San Francisco. And that is people who are former addicts themselves, people from the recovery community who believe that San Francisco needs to make it more challenging, more difficult for people to get access to drugs than they get access to treatment. So this is a way to try and hold people accountable by getting them into the treatment that they desperately need to save their lives. Mm-hmm. And again, it's coming from the recovery community.
Maybe, you know, when I was preparing for the show, I saw a virtual parade of public health and drug treatment advocates who were saying that this measure would be ineffective at best, possibly harmful. I mean, I know you've heard them too. So what do you think they're missing, or what is it that you're hearing from these people that you think those advocates are missing?
Well, I'm glad you said that you saw the advocates. You saw the people who are part of treating the challenges that exist in San Francisco. But what you didn't see just this week on Monday were a host of people in the recovery community, pretty much all former addicts, hundreds of them, marching to City Hall and asking for us to focus on treatment, to focus on stronger solutions like a Proposition F. People who believe that the city needs to do something different. And in fact, you know, in many cases feel like harm reduction is not necessarily reducing the harm. So I still don't understand why no one is advocating or raising the voices of people who actually were addicts on the streets of San Francisco.
So talk to me a little bit about the measure itself. Where did the idea to do it this way, focusing on this particular people, come from?
Again, I just told you, it came from people who were struggling with addiction. I have been meeting with a number of groups, including Salvation Army, Positive Directions Equal Change, folks, Delancey Street, Mimi Silbert, who supports this measure. I've been meeting with those folks to talk to them about the different options that we might have to help combat this issue. And when we brought this to their attention in terms of the various options, many of them said, this is it. We need to do this. And I'm like, are you sure? And they're like, yes, this is going to be important. It's an important step in helping us get people on the right path if we require treatment. And let's just talk a little bit about treatment. Treatment is not just about a bed. Treatment is about outpatient treatment. It's abstinence-based treatment. There's a whole host of options that exist in San Francisco for treatment, and everyone continues to focus on the beds when, in fact, we have a number of different options that could help people get clean and get sober and move on with their lives in San Francisco in a good way.
So, Mayor Breed, for people who are not in the details of this yet, maybe are even just opening up their voter guide for the first time and going, oh, what is Prop F? Give us the details on how precisely this program is supposed to work.
So what happens is about the 5,200 people that we provide general assistance, it's our CAP program that we provide that to, about close to 30% of those people have already self-identified and said, look, I have a problem. And so that's part of it, is to try and get them into treatment. The other part is to do an analysis with our clinicians to determine whether or not they have issues related to drugs. In fact, San Francisco has been really cracking down, making arrests of those both using and dealing drugs on the streets of San Francisco. And about half of those users actually aren't even San Francisco residents. And we actually have discovered even some levels of fraud, forged documents of people who are claiming to live in San Francisco and don't. So we need to get control over this system. But more importantly, we want to be able to try and get people into treatment, especially the ones that we know need it.
So I've heard from people that San Francisco has tried components or like versions of this approach before, most prominently Gavin Newsom's Care Not Cash program some years ago. Do you think that that program worked, or do you think that that's a good analogy for what you're trying to do here?
Well, it's not the same thing. Care Not Cash is really about prioritizing housing and shelter and reducing the amount of direct assistance in order to get people off the streets into housing or into shelter. This is about treatment. This is about trying to help those suffering from addiction get directly into treatment. And that's the whole premise of it. It's another component of what we need in order to address this crisis. And to be clear, with Care Not Cash, we weren't able to implement that during the pandemic because we had to empty our shelter beds. And then secondly, with this court decision that's going all the way to the Supreme Court, the ability to force people off the streets has been very challenging in implementing Care Not Cash. Again, this goes back to treatment and trying to provide people a way to get healthy, to get clean. And I mean, with the number of overdose deaths, when you think about drugs in San Francisco, and over time, whether it's crack, heroin, or other drugs, we've never seen overdose deaths of this magnitude in our city. This is even worse than COVID. And we shut the whole city and the whole world down for COVID. And we need to respond to what is happening with overdose deaths in the same way.
Another debate around this ballot measure has been whether there is enough treatment already available for people, to say nothing of if there's an increase in demand for treatment as a result of this program's kind of implementation. So how can the city be ready to provide the level of treatment that it needs to provide when critics say that there's already not treatment available on demand?
Well, that's not accurate, because our street crisis response team, which has folks from the San Francisco Fire Department and clinicians and other folks, they're able to, when they're out on the streets dealing with sometimes overdoses and Narcan, they're able to immediately provide buprenorphine. And we're starting to see an increase in the number of people who are agreeing. We can't force someone to take buprenorphine, but we can provide it, we can offer it, and that's what we're doing with our street crisis response team. The city has over 13 clinics, including Maria X. Martinez Clinic in the South of Market neighborhood, which is really a place that we know many people who struggle with addiction go to. And we could also provide treatment through our various free clinics throughout San Francisco. There are also outpatient options, as well as a number of our behavioral health beds that provide support to people struggling with addiction. Now, to be clear, if we are not able to offer an option, then that's different. Then we will not be able to take away someone's benefits if we can't offer a treatment option. So enough with the excuses. It's time for us to move forward with something like Proposition F in order to help us, provide us with another tool to combat this drug crisis.
We're talking about Prop F. It's a San Francisco measure on the March 5th ballot that would withhold cash assistance from people who use drugs and refuse treatment. Up first, we've got Mayor London Breed, who's, as you can hear, is a big backer of the ballot measure. We'd love to hear from you. What do you think of Prop F? Have you made up your mind? What are the factors that you're considering? You can email forum@kqed.org. You can find us on all of our social channels. You can give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You know, Mayor Breed, has your thinking on how to help people who are addicted to drugs changed since you became mayor of San Francisco?
Well, it has not necessarily changed. You know, I know that we have, I've been a big supporter of safe consumption sites. And the reason why I've been a big supporter of safe consumption sites is because, you know, my goal in providing safe consumption sites is an option for treatment, is to help people and to meet people where they are. I think the ability to have a number of different options, because, you know, it's not a one size fits all. These are, everyone has a different story. Everyone has a different addiction. Everyone has a different challenge to sobriety. And the challenge that we have in San Francisco is everything is about mostly harm reduction. And it's also about administering some level of drugs, our methadone clinics and other things. But abstinence-based solutions are also a part of our portfolio finally in San Francisco. And so we need all of it. We need every layer of support and help that we can get. Delancey Street is an amazing option, is a historic option that has been around in San Francisco for decades. And we need to make sure that we're providing every option possible in order to help people that are struggling with addiction get the support and treatment they need.
Mayor Breed, we're going to let you go in a sec. But before, we want to just ask you quickly about another proposition that you're pushing for on the ballot, Prop E, which expands when police can engage in high-speed chases. And, you know, yesterday's SF Standard found, you know, 41% of police pursuits by SFPD officers 2018 to 2021 resulted in a collision, kind of twice the statewide average, very dense city. Given those risks, I mean, why should voters trust police with the power to engage in these chases?
Well, I think oftentimes, you know, with our very advocacy-focused police commission, you know, a lot of times these data points get skewed. And what I want to say about Proposition E and what we're trying to do is to allow for the option to do these when safely to do so. And that's why drones is also a part of this. So number one, in the middle of the night when people's businesses or what have you, homes or whatever are being broken into, you know, we want the police to be able to pursue a suspect if they're able to make it to their car and speed away. We want to be able to do what's necessary in order to apprehend suspects when it's safe to do so. And I've made that perfectly clear. But drones are a part of the solution, too. So when we're talking about these chases, they don't always have to require the police to pursue the suspects. In Los Angeles, for many, many years, they used helicopters. In San Francisco, we have the technology to use drones. So it's not just about trying to allow for car chases. It's about trying to utilize technology and other tools in order to address the issues around crime and safety in San Francisco, which includes drones and surveillance technology.
Mayor London Breed, thank you so much for joining us. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for more right after the break.
At Star One Credit Union, you're first because they put you first. Ranked number one in the nation for direct financial benefit to their members 10 years and counting. Star One invests in your best interest with the latest banking technology, an authentic human experience, and effortlessly simple everyday banking solutions that put you first. They also believe in giving back, donating to over 70 Bay Area organizations annually. Become a member at StarOne.org or drop by any of their Bay Area locations. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about Prop F. It's a San Francisco measure on the March 5th ballot that would withhold cash assistance from people who use drugs and refuse treatment. Earlier, we were joined by Mayor London Breed making the case for Prop F. We want to bring in Aaron Peskin, president of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. Welcome, Supervisor Peskin.
Good morning, Alexis. Thanks for having me on.
We're also joined by Trent Rohr, executive director of San Francisco Human Services Agency. Thanks for joining us, Trent.
Thanks, Alexis. Good night. Good morning.
Feels that way, doesn't it? I know.
It does.
Long morning. Supervisor Peskin, you just heard Mayor Breed make the case for it. In your, you know, brief rebuttal, what would you say to her key points?
Well, I certainly understand the very grave situation that San Francisco and cities around America are in with regard to skyrocketing fentanyl deaths. But this is, in my mind, an election year political ploy that really seeks to divert attention away from a failed overdose response. And fundamentally, it ignores good science. The doctors and the Department of Public Health have largely been cut out of this. It really does not address the overdose prevention plan that the mayor and the Department of Public Health have put forward, which is gathering dust on a shelf. That has a very clear set of priorities that we need to implement. Instead, this is really harking back to the Republican Pete Wilson welfare Cadillac Queen tropes that really have no place in San Francisco. This is going to create more bureaucracy when streamlining is actually the right thing. The mayor's very interested in streamlining planning processes and other processes, but this is really fundamentally for public health. This is a public health crisis. It should be metrics-based. This is not the answer.
What do you say to people who look at this measure and just read the face of it and say, the city shouldn't give cash to people who are addicted to drugs, and, you know, the kind of parenthetical there is, who will then use that money to go buy drugs?
Well, San Francisco is a very expensive city, and $100 for a homeless person, $109 a month, is not enough money to eat on. It's not enough money to buy drugs on. $700 per person to have housing in San Francisco is not enough money to be housed and eat. I think that is a terrible stereotype. It's not. Just so that we're clear here, county assistance, which is a state mandated welfare program, mm-hmm. is used by less than 0.5% of the San Francisco population. They have to be San Francisco residents to get those welfare mm-hmm. benefits. The population, which various reports estimate is about 10 to some people, Mr. Rohr say as high as 30% of that 5,000 people, is a small portion of the folks that are using illicit, dangerous drugs. And by the way, this proposition does not talk about the number one thing, which I know about because I'm in recovery from alcohol abuse, which is alcohol. Alcohol is not dealt with in Proposition F at all.
Hmm. Here's another, I think, common argument that's made. Is in other parts of our lives, we say people respond to a variety of incentives, both positive and negative. You know, you get a reward for doing this, and you know, you have a negative consequence for doing that. Why would substance abuse in this way be different? Like, why not have some punitive measures in place around substance abuse?
Well, let's start with a stark and unfortunate reality, which is we do not have enough drug treatment slots now. And so what this is going to ultimately do without doctors in the room is already overburden system. And so this is going to create more homelessness. This is going to put more people on our streets, and this is going to ultimately endanger lives.
Before we go to Trent, I do want to let's bring in our first caller here. Let's bring in Scotty in San Francisco. Welcome, Scotty.
Hi, good morning.
Hey, go ahead.
I have a comment about Mayor Breed's comments about drug addiction and taking public assistance in exchange for treatment. And she mentioned Delancey Street and all these organizations. Delancey Street, you know, it's a who are eligible that are going to prison. In order not to go to prison, they do drug treatment in Delancey Street. It's not an option for the average homeless person on the street. I guarantee you they're not going to let them in there. It's a really strict program to get into. Mm-hmm. And second of all, if you take away, you know, whatever dollars from somebody that's on drugs, using the money for food and alcohol or whatever they need, but it's going to make the situation with their cars broken into, people stealing from the stores, it's going to make it even worse. And second of all, if someone's addicted to drugs, they're not going to quit doing drugs just because you took $100 away from them.
Hmm. Hey, Scotty,
do you have, make any sense. And,
do you have any personal experience with these things, or where are you drawn on for kind of your conviction here?
I have firsthand experience with these things. I personally am not a drug addict, but my brother, he's been a...
Oh, no.
And remember that have... I mean,
oh, I'm so sorry.
I mean, they've been to prison.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, we were just losing you for a second. Go ahead.
My brother's been in San Quentin over drug addiction. My cousins have been in prison drug addiction, and they still haven't quit. So that's not going to help anybody. It's only going to make the jails get full of people that don't belong there. And yeah, I know the streets are pretty bad, but we've got to come up with another solution because it's just going to make our social, you know, situation even worse.
Yeah. Hey, Scotty, thank you. Appreciate that call. Sorry about the line there. Sorry about the personal experience with your family, too. You know, Trent Rohr, Executive Director, San Francisco Human Services Agency, there is a proviso we have to make here too, right? Which is you're not here representing. Why don't you do it?
Sure. Thanks for having me. I'm not here in my official capacity as Department Executive Director. I'm taking my own personal time.
Okay.
It's important to note.
All right. That out of the way, we just heard Scotty. Powerful testimony against. What do you hear in that, and you know, how would you respond?
I think there's a few points I want to make. First, directly to Scotty's, we do have evidence both from other states and localities that have implemented this, as well as sort of the field of coercive treatment overall, that this can work. But LA County has this provision in their general relief program, and the state of New York also requires it. There was a study completed in 2012 that showed that those who chose to participate in the treatment that was mandated, and it was about 70% of people who were mandated, saw higher quarterly earnings post-treatment. They were less likely to become homeless than those who refused treatment, and their job retention was much better. Similarly, in New York, retention rates for those who accepted treatment were up to 55%. Retention rate into the treatment program after 6 months, 88% after 30 days. So these are the exact same programs administered by LA County and by New York that has shown that this can work. In addition,
I have a question. Can we stop on that? Let's pause on the science for 1 second. Because I have like legitimate questions about this. I mean, if these studies exist, which I assume they do, you're saying them on the radio. Why do I hear that it's basically a settled issue that coercive treatment doesn't work from advocates?
I think that what advocates have been saying is that this is compulsory treatment, which is not. Compulsory treatment is something that we see in places like China where they're forced to do treatment. This is what is called in the field coercive treatment, where you're offering an individual some level of choice and whether or not to participate in treatment. And if they choose not to, there's a consequence. And in this case, they would lose their cash assistance. Things like drug court, where you get a higher sentence if you don't participate in treatment, is now an evidence-based model that shows effective outcomes. Something like the employee assistance programs, where an employee must go to treatment in order to retain his or her or their job, shows increased uptake of treatment and success. So there are evidence-based models in the world of coercive treatment. And the last piece I do need to say, because we're hearing about increased homelessness and things like that, the way that Prop F was written is that an individual, if he or she refuse treatment or screening or don't participate successfully, they do lose their cash. However, they retain eligibility for Medi-Cal, their health insurance, retain eligibility for their $290 a month in CalFresh food benefits. And then if they're in city-funded housing or shelter, they retain either their housing unit or their shelter bed. If they're in private housing, we will pay the landlord directly their rent for the month and beyond if it is shown that it will prevent them from being homeless.
Is there already a system in place to do that, or does that have to be a new system that's set up?
In terms of
pay directly to the landlord?
We do vendor voucher payments all the time.
Okay.
It will expand that, but we certainly have the mechanism to do it.
Supervisor Preskin?
with all due respect to Trent Rohr, who I've known for many, many years, first of all, this entire scheme is predicated on kicking people out of general assistance. The irony of this is the $1.5 million that this new bureaucracy would cost is going to be paid for by kicking people off the rolls, which means fundamentally they're going to be on our streets. These are San Francisco residents. That is the fundamental precondition to getting welfare assistance. And so what this means at $700 a pop is that you're going to be kicking thousands of people off of the rolls onto the streets. And half of the recipients who are housed, so we're talking again about a population of approximately 5,000 people, 1,000 of them are homeless, 4,000 of them are housed. This is rough numbers. Half of those 4,000 are in private, not public housing facilities. There is no provision in Proposition F to take care of those people. Those are people who are going to be on our streets. And to say this is not coercive, of course it's coercive. What you're being told is...
Well, not compulsory. Coercive, but not...
Yeah, but it's highly coercive. And the literature shows, and this is not literature from advocates, this is published literature from the medical profession, shows that that doesn't work. This has been tried many times in America. And there's a reason that the San Francisco Marin Medical Society, which is the doctors' representatives, are opposed to Proposition F. There's a reason the San Francisco Chronicle is opposed to Proposition F. There's a reason San Francisco Planning and Urban Research, these are all very moderate organizations, are opposed to this because it's sloppily written and it's an election year ploy.
Let's come back to Trent here.
I just have to respond directly to President Peskin's claim that there's nothing in the initiative that provides for us to pay a private landlord the rent. There is. It specifically says that for 30 days or the first month that someone loses benefits, we shall pay the private landlord the portion, the client's portion of the rent. In addition, I and the department have discretion to extend that beyond 30 days if the client demonstrates that it'll lead to their homelessness. The other thing is that clients are always free to reapply. So if an individual gets discontinued from cash aid because, again, they didn't do treatment.
Which I understand happens a lot for other reasons.
They do, right. They're allowed to apply the following month. And we see that all the time with individuals who are required to do work activities, which they often don't attend their training or their work fair. They would get discontinued and lose their cash assistance only to reapply the following month. So simply, we're adding just another element to the county dole assistance program that individuals are required to do. Everyone must do something per the local law. It's either work or job training, applying for federal disability, and we're adding a third element. If you're addicted, you must do treatment in exchange for your cash assistance.
How much of the sort of bureaucratic overhead of this program do you think, how much will be added as a result of this?
It's really very, very little. We currently in the program assess every applicant and recipient for what we call employability readiness. And it's the same group of clinicians, including nurse practitioners, psychologists, medical doctors who do these assessments. We're simply adding a substance abuse screen, some questions to that assessment that already exists.
You know, something...
And you do this over the phone, Trent?
We do the clinical assessment in person.
I am curious about the testing versus screening. It may be confusing for people out there. People might just be saying, why aren't you just having people pee in a cup and then you don't have to do this screen? So what's the answer to that?
The answer is that there's no provision in state law that allows counties to require drug testing as a condition of eligibility for an entitlement. In fact, the Supreme Court voided a law in Michigan that had random drug testing for welfare recipients. So even if the city wanted to drug test, which we don't, the law doesn't allow it.
Well, the mayor did want that last September, but by October, she had changed her mind.
The initiative does not speak to testing at all. We cannot test. The screening is something that is evolving in the field, but it's typically brief questionnaires. It allows the identification of individuals who potentially have unhealthy substance use. Things like the Drug Abuse Screening Test, or DAST, or DAST-10, is commonly used in the field. The state of Washington uses it, North Carolina uses it, and many other states. So there is a body of work that's already being done to assess individuals who have an addiction and get them into the treatment that they desperately need.
Do you worry that people – can I ask – I just want to ask do you worry that people will stop being as honest with the people that they're talking to because they know that they could lose benefits? I mean, my understanding is that about 20% of people have shared that they use drugs or within the program already.
That's precisely what's going to happen. And that's precisely why this is dangerous. I mean, look, for all of the money that Trent and the mayor want to spend here, we have an overdose prevention plan that the mayor touted that calls for the expansion of addiction services at hospitals, that calls for more treatment slots. The notion that we already have an overburdened system and we're going to continue to overburden it is insane.
Let's bring in another caller since we can get some more folks. Cedric in San Francisco, welcome.
Hey, good morning to each and every one of you. I support Prop F, and not only do I support Prop F, but I voted for Proposition F. And one of the reasons I voted for Prop F is because it's the first time somebody has stepped up to try to do something about this fentanyl pandemic that's going on in this city. And it also, for the first time, I can see where a person gets a chance to see a medical doctor, because a lot of times people go to treatment, they get mental health services, substance abuse services, but they very seldom get to see a doctor coming directly off the street. The other thing is that I heard Supervisor Peskin use words like coercion. I done heard him use the thing of that this is a scheme. And when we use words like language like that, that's divisive words, and that keeps us split and apart. And that doesn't take in the hand of the 800 and something people that's dead on the street. Even if he says that our system is overflowing and that it would be a strain on it, we still need to stop the deaths, and somebody is doing something about it. The other thing is, I don't even look at this Prop F as coercion or forcing somebody into treatment. It's only contingency management, which is the same thing they use for methamphetamine use. They give people gift cards if they come to a class. They give them gift cards if they come. So all this is that you will get your general assistance if you go and access the treatment. That's the bottom line on that.
Hey, Cedric, we're about to go into a break here. I really appreciate your perspective. Thank you so much for calling.
And he didn't
in.
Disclose that he's the executive director of Positive Directions, which stands to benefit from this measure.
That's Supervisor Peskin. The contingency management, if you're interested in it as well, we have a whole show about it, and you can look it up. Forum and Contingency Management should find it for you. We're talking about Prop F, San Francisco measure on the March 5th ballot that would withhold cash assistance from people who use drugs and refuse treatment. Joined by the president of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, Aaron Peskin, and Trent Rohr, executive director of the San Francisco Human Services Agency. Earlier, we were joined by Mayor London Breed. We're going to get to a lot more of your calls, comments, and questions about Prop F after the break. You might want to try the email to forum@kqed.org. We'll try and work through as many calls as we can. The number is 866-733-6786. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for more right after the break.
At Star One Credit Union, they're all about building long-term relationships and helping your money grow by making banking effortlessly easy. It's why they offer real great rates on home, auto, and solar loans. Star One provides super simple, everyday banking solutions, including a stellar digital banking experience that puts you first. Become a member at starone.org or drop by any of their Bay Area locations. Star One Credit Union, in your best interest.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about Prop F, a San Francisco measure on the March 5th ballot that would withhold cash assistance from people who use drugs and refuse treatment. Earlier, we were joined by one of the big proponents of the bill, Mayor London Breed. With us now, we have Trent Rohr, executive director of the San Francisco Human Services Agency, and Aaron Peskin, president of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. Let's get back to the phones. Let's bring in Rebecca in San Francisco. Welcome.
Hello. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
I would like to make a comment that the issue of race has not been brought into this conversation yet, that it's going to disproportionately affect persons of color, that's black and brown folks, and it's not addressing other folks who are out and using drugs on the street, and also a comment about the screening process. And the fact that the welfare system is already understaffed and not really seeing how that's going to work out. But I think race is a big piece of this conversation.
Mm-hmm. Trent Rohr, how do you respond to that, that this would have a disproportionate impact on specifically people of color?
Yeah, I think, sadly and unfortunately, that what we see on the streets and we see in the overdose data, it is disproportionately affecting black and brown residents of San Francisco. But what I see about Prop F is it's hopefully going to be put in place to help people, right? We're providing access to treatment. The idea around Prop F is not to be punitive. The idea around Prop F is to say, you have an addiction, we're giving you over $700 a month that invariably leads to you buying drugs because you're addicted. Instead, we're going to keep your housing and keep your food support and your medical care, and we're going to offer you treatment. And if you take the treatment, you continue to get your cash. So
it's intended to be a little punitive, right? I mean, that's kind of the point.
Well, it's, you know, you opened the questioning, Alexis, with sort of the stick and carrot notion, right? Well, you know, the punitive or coercive side is if you don't participate in treatment, then, right, you don't get your cash assistance. The carrot, of course, is a treatment regimen that you stick with and hopefully enter recovery. I think it's also important to note that we have street teams every day offering individuals treatment. We had the Tenderloin Linkage Center, where we actually had to change the name to Tenderloin Center because people weren't accepting the linkages to treatment that we were offering them. There's this extremely low uptake rate on treatment, despite the best efforts of our harm reduction and other teams on the street. This is a way to hopefully increase that uptake rate. And what we've seen in Los Angeles and New York is that in New York, the uptake rate's about 50%, which is much better than what it is on the street. And the LA uptake rate is about 70%. So it does show that these cities and states that have tried this have had some positive impact.
Supervisor Peskin, you know, I wanted to address both what Trent's saying, but also what Cedric said, caller before the break, which is about, you know, the difference between this and contingency management. You know, it is kind of similar, right? I mean, it's basically using money as within an incentive structure to try and get a certain kind of behavior out of people. But do you believe that this particular design of using money is a bad idea relative to some of the other things that we've seen, you know, tried here in the city in contingency management?
Well, first of all, Alexis, this administration's been all over the map. Trent just put his finger on it. When, after the mayor declared the Tenderloin emergency, which the Board of Supervisors approved, and the Tenderloin Center was opened up, we actually saw a reduction in deaths. And the caller's right. These are disproportionately black and brown people who are the poorest of the poor, who are dying in disproportionate numbers. And then the mayor reversed course, closed that center, and death spiked. We have seen a mayor who has talked about harm reduction and is now speaking against harm reduction, who has passed an overdose prevention plan that is now sitting on the shelf gathering dust because this seems to be more appealing as an election year ploy to voters to really distract from the fact that the mayor's been all over the map on this stuff.
Mm. Trent, do you agree that that plan's sitting on the shelf gathering dust?
I'm over the Human Services Agency and not public health, so I don't want to speak to a plan that's not under my agency. But I do want to respond to what President Peskin mentioned about overdose deaths. A key component of that plan is to prevent overdose deaths, which obviously is a goal we all want. But I don't hear often enough the goal of getting people into treatment and getting people into recovery. And yes, the Tenderloin Center was effective at reversing overdoses. We reverse, as a city, over 15 overdoses a day. We still have over 2 people die a day from overdoses, but our EMS crew is saving literally 20 lives a day. That's fantastic work. What we're not talking about is when are people going to accept treatment And I understand this is a horrible addiction and the worst drug I've ever seen in this field in 2.5 decades. But we need to start talking more about our treatment uptake rate and our treatment completion rate. And Prop F is purporting to move that needle on treatment acceptance.
Supervisor Preskin, couple things. We had a guest on the show who was an EMT with the fire department. Said, at the beginning of his career, they'd give people like half of a Narcan dose. You know, now they're giving people, 3, 4, 5, he said, to bring people back. The point of that was that that's a quantitative measure that people are getting worse on the street, even in the course of, since fentanyl came in, things are getting worse for people. We have the sort of legislative options and kind of ballot options we have, right? I mean, is it better, that is to say, to continue with the status quo than to pass this measure?
It is best for us to implement the overdose prevention plan that has been adopted by the Department of Public Health, to use the metrics and accountability that our doctors have put before us, to expand our existing addiction treatment services for substance use disorders. That plan is there. Rather than going and creating another bureaucracy because the Department of Human Services is frustrated with the Department of Public Health and the mayor's not calling balls and strikes and making her departments march together in the same way, we have a plan. We should implement that plan. We should use our limited resources for that plan. I think it is that simple.
Yeah. Earlier you mentioned your own recovery. And I was wondering, has that changed the way that you've thought about incentives or these kinds of measures in the city?
There's a lot of literature that says that people who go into recovery have to be ready for recovery. That was certainly the case for me. I take it one day at a time, but I was ready for recovery. It's not something that I hadn't thought about. It's not something that I didn't want in the back of my mind, but nobody could shove me into it until I was ready. That's my personal experience. Mm-hmm.
Let's go back to the phones here. Let's go to David in San Francisco. Welcome, David.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me on. Just quick rundown of my experience to show that I have credibility in making my comments. I've lived in Tenderloin for 30 years. I have been in the recovery community since the late 90s, starting with my first addiction, which was crack. I eventually went to meth. I hand out drug wound care supplies to the unhoused throughout my neighborhood, including harm reduction supplies. And I've got to say, not only does my experience demonstrate the flaws, tell me that Prop S is flawed legislation, but every study that I've ever read and every study that I know that is out there shows, number one, that the unhoused don't spend their money on drugs. For the most part, majority spend it on necessary items like toiletries, food, and rent. Okay? So there are so many things wrong with the process that it is hard to begin. It's, number one, it's so vaguely written. And even Trent spoke to his discretion or CAP's discretion of whether or not to extend somebody's rent income, right? Well, I'm sorry, Trent, no disrespect, because I don't trust your discretion, okay? And second of all, I've had plenty of experience with CAP, and they are beautiful people over there. But the onus of Prop F puts the onus on the initial CAP folks. Just read the Prop, all you have to do, to determine whether or not somebody has an issue with drugs. Yeah. Now, how?
Wait, hold on, David.
Go ahead.
Well, I just want to. We got another person who also in recovery on the lines in support of Prop F. I just want to bring them in. One second here. Craig in San Francisco, welcome.
How you doing?
Hey, good. Thanks for your call.
I support Prop F. The reason I support Prop F, because I see it as another intervention for our tool belt. Everybody is always doing So one size fits all. This is better than that. And Prop F is an intervention tool. It's a way to get people in treatment. We have people in San Francisco currently dying at numbers that are outrageous. 800 people last year. We're at 60 already this year. And we continue to talk about doing the same thing over and over again, and there's no change. We need to have interventions that are going to address this issue directly. Again, I don't know how many times the Trent has explained that it's not going to affect people's housing, it's not going to affect their food, it's not going to affect where they're at and if they're in a shelter, but it is going to address the fact that taxpayers' money is getting used to buy drugs. And somebody can tell you all day that people on the street don't spend their money on drugs, but when I walk through the Tenderloin every day, when I walk through and I step over people laying on the streets, they're spending their money to buy drugs. And we need to quit playing with this. And the intervention and Prop F is an approach to how we can address this problem.
Yeah.
Because what we've been doing for the last year and a half is talk about we're addressing the problem, and the problem's not getting addressed.
Yeah. Craig, thanks so much. Appreciate your perspective and your passion there as well. I'm going to give Supervisor Peskin and Trent a chance to respond to our calls here. Supervisor Peskin, you want to add something?
I understand and I share the frustration. What I do not share is the fact that there has not been any accountability at the top. That's precisely why you have two departments that are in essence fighting here. The Department of Public Health that should be the lead on a public health crisis, and the Human Services Agency, which is in the business of processing and putting people on our welfare rolls. They're not doctors. They're not clinicians. And I know that Trent Rohr said in the Chronicle that he stayed in his lane for too long. But quite frankly, if we had a chief executive who was calling balls and strikes, this would be being led by the Department of Public Health, by doctors and clinicians.
Trent?
The Human Services Agency does administer the cash assistance programs, but we also have identified that 30%, based on a match with our partner department, Department of Public Health, who we are working with on this, that 30% of people who we provide over $700 a month in cash are addicted, the vast majority addicted to opioids and using fentanyl. By no longer staying in my lane, what the context behind that quote is that the mission of the Human Services Agency, in simplest terms, is to help improve people's lives. When we're giving $712 a month to someone who's addicted, who the data says will eventually die, we are not improving people's lives. And so it's time that we look at our cash assistance program and pull whatever levers we can to help improve people's lives. To the caller who talked about individuals receiving cash assistance who are using it on basic needs and et cetera, he's absolutely correct in that 70% of the people on county adult assistance are not showing up as addicted, are not showing up in the Department of Public Health's records, and they are using it on rent and on basic needs. But there are 30% who are using it, some to pay rent, some who's living, 30% or so who are living in city-funded housing only pay 30% of their cash for rent, leaving them over $430 a month in cash. And sadly, when they're addicted, they're using it to buy drugs that are extremely harmful, if not deadly to them.
And I just want to say, there, as the Chronicle said, is a kernel of truth in a pile of rhetorical manure. I think there is certainly, some cases where Trent is spot on. But we're dealing with a population here of 5,000 people, less than 0.5% of the city's population. And this maybe applies to a small percentage of those people. Where Trent's getting his 30% number, I've never seen published numbers from this government or from the Department of Public Health. I've seen numbers in the 10 to 15% range.
I see Trent pulling out paper, so maybe we'll...
But let me just touch on, and this is a societal comment, that, this campaign, Proposition F, which now has about $1 million in support of it, much of it coming from tech billionaires with the No on F side, I think, has raised $25,000, is really a sign of the misguided priorities of some of the tech elites in this town. Proposition A on the ballot, which would create housing for thousands and thousands of people, has not enjoyed the kind of tech largesse that this proposition has received. And I think that's a pretty crazy comment.
Well, what I hear from people
society.
Like that is they see harm. Here's what I hear. Harm reduction advocates are like, we've never actually done the thing. We've never gone all the way and really done harm reduction the way that we need to, Portugal style, et cetera. Tech billionaire types and also associated folks who are let's call them moderates of this discussion, are like, actually, harm reduction has failed and we need to do something else. We need to go back to some other different thing. They say, you know, since we started doing harm reduction, look at the streets, it's worse, right? I mean, that's what the political dynamic I see playing out. And the people, you know, what do you think?
I think you had a pharmaceutical industry that hooked millions of people in this country on opioid addiction, and once the federal government and others slowly crack down on them, we are left with the detritus of that from here to the heartland of America, to the East Coast. This was largely brought to us by corporate America and the pharmaceutical industry. That's a fact.
Yeah. Trent, you want to? You just handed Supervisor Peskin a paper. It's about the 30%, I believe,
yeah,
of people who.
It is, and you know, we're one city and departments all working together. And the notion that we're not working with public health on this is, while I understand.
You only got about 45 seconds.
Sure. We did an aggregate match of individuals receiving county adult assistance over the course of a year. And the match was with the treatment system for Department of Public Health. And what it showed was that 29% of individuals who received CAP at some point during the year was also in the public health system as having a diagnosis of a substance use disorder.
So that is, when you say aggregate, you just mean you didn't look at individual names. You weren't trying to, there's a...
Because of HIPAA laws, we provide our CAP assistance data to DPH. They do the match in the aggregate, yes.
Got it. All right. Well, you got it.
And one thing that is very important is that CAP recipients are already offered drug treatment. That's already a... amount of your population that is already as part, they don't have to work if they get drug treatment, correct?
No, Supervisor. We offer mental health treatment. We have a contract with Richmond Area Multiservices to provide mental health support for CAP individuals.
All right. Sorry we didn't get to more of the comments from listeners. A lot of back and forth here. Really interesting, and I'm really thank both of you for engaging in this. We've been joined by President of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, Aaron Peskin. Thanks so much. As well as Trent Rohr, Executive Director of the San Francisco Human Services Agency. Thanks, Trent.
Thank you.
Earlier, we were joined by Mayor London Breed. Thank you to all of our callers for your passion on this issue. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Stay tuned for another hour of Forum Ahead with Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of KQED's Forum are provided by the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Heising Simons Foundation.
Do you love your local bookstore? Well, I have the perfect event for you. This Saturday, April 27th, is Independent Bookstore Day. It's a day to celebrate your favorite local bookstore. I'm Olivia Allen Price, host of the Bay Curious podcast here at KQED, and I'm popping in to let you know that we will be hosting an event at Green Apple Books in San Francisco for the occasion. Come out for an author Q&A about the Bay Curious book. We'll be playing some Bay Area-themed trivia. There will be prizes and so much more. And the best part, tickets are donation-based, and all proceeds go to the Prisoners Literature Project. Learn more at kqed.org/live. I hope to see you there.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.